Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on this Friday. A lot of fun we're having today on the show. We'll tell you more about that in just a few moments. Still to come, Rich Scarcello, Reading Eagle. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day, Kobe Bryant and the Lakers.
16-13 and 2.5 blocks.
Oh, no! The Mamba still has venom in those veins. Oh, my goodness. And a technical foul. The Black Mamba strikes again. Clint Capella, click, click. Welcome to your Mamba moment.
On TNT last night, Kobe Bryant with a slam dunk. Mostly Reggie Miller there. Some Kevin Harlan. Courtesy of TNT and our play-by-play call of the day. All right, in a few moments, Rich Scarcello, Reading Eagle, talking about Penn State football, Bowl Media Day today. As Penn State, 2 weeks from tomorrow, will take on Georgia in the Tax Slayer Bowl. Kevin's still blown away by the Chewbacca Penn State role. Yes, Kevin, two calls. One to the Hoops office, one to him, we're in. Two calls. Ye of little faith, Kevin. Ye of little faith. You don't have any connection to the movie. Okay, if you say so, Kevin. All right, we're just having a lot of fun today. That's what Kathy said to me. She said, don't get arrogant with him. I said, I know, I'm just having fun with him. All right. she'll bounce. She always brings me back to earth. She's fun. She's great. basketball tonight, tomorrow night, Penn State and Drexel at 7 o'clock in the Plestra, then off to Las Vegas. Today's show being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, and Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Stock up for the holidays now. Now. Week from today's Christmas, 2 weeks from today's New Year's. Stock up now. Water, soda, snacks. They roast the peanuts fresh and hot every day, and the pickle bar is second to none. This guy, Barrel Pickles, Dill Pickles. Love them. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And Kevin turned in a great vehicle, which has an unbelievable deal on it. At Sunbury Motors. Now, doesn't that make the ultimate Christmas gift? All right, time to bring in Rich Scarcello, Reading Eagle, as Penn State gets ready for the Tax Slayer Bowl with Georgia, but also has named an offensive coordinator in Joe Moorhead, who had his press conference just 2 days ago. Rich, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. Your thoughts on the in your research, your thoughts on the Joe Moorhead hire?
You know, on paper, it looks like a terrific hire. You know, he's been very impressive at Fordham. You know, the numbers offensively speak for themselves. You know, really, you know, as we all know by now, really turned around the Fordham program. So, yeah, I mean, on first blush, as I wrote in my column, it looks like a home run. You know, only time will tell if that's the case. And but you know, on the surface, it looks like a terrific hire.
And it's going to come down, obviously, to making whatever personnel he has works. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I'm not so sure at times people talk enough about personnel and execution. They talk mostly about schemes.
Yeah, it's a good point. And you know, what he did at Fordham, you know, with implementing the run-pass balance. I know, you know, they had running backs who had terrific years and quarterbacks who had terrific years. I think that's what impresses me. And the other thing that impresses me too, Steve, and this is getting away from play calling and execution and all that, is that the Fordham athletic director and the Fordham president went out of their way to praise him after Joe decided to leave Fordham for Penn State. That doesn't, as you know, that doesn't always happen.
No.
And for them to, what they've written and what they've said publicly, it tells you that they think very highly of Joe Moorhead.
And that speaks a lot, too. And I think for him professionally, just on the outside looking in, FCS head coach, offensive coordinator, FBS major conference. Also, I know his family was living in Greenwich, Connecticut. I mean, that's a hard commute back and forth. I think probably getting his family like within a couple of miles of work is not going to hurt him too much either.
No. But I mean, I'm looking forward to Friday when we get a chance to talk to at least James Franklin, hopefully Joe Moorhead, and find out, you know, how many people James talked to and how did he have Joe in mind when he made the decision to let go of John Donovan, you know, all those things. That'll be interesting to find out on Friday. But I'm going to guess that James had probably a short list. How many's on that list, I don't know, but had a short list of people. And I'm going to guess that he got one of his top people that on that list.
Right. When you go into these bowl media days, what are you looking for, if anything, or just letting it happen? Now, obviously, with Joe Moorhead, there's a purpose there, but anything else?
Well, I think if Joe's there, obviously that's a whole different thing, and that's unique. That's, like you said, that's a unique situation. Sometimes what I've found over the years is that once coaches and players have had a chance to digest a season, they get away for it for a couple of weeks, they may have a little bit of different perspective on certain things than they did during the week-to-week grind. And, you know, that's one thing I do look forward to. And they're also, usually a little, they're a little more relaxed. It's a little bit better environment to ask questions rather than immediately after a game or during the week, midweek when they're in the middle of classes and preparation for the next game. So I look to that and see if anybody's perspective on things changes.
How often have you had a chance to talk with Carl Nassib?
Not as much as I would like.
Right.
But what would indicate the main, the one thing that I will take with me is the conversation we had with him in the spring and how impressive he was, because I'd never spoken to him before. I don't know how many people had before that day, and how impressive he was and how good he was. He seemed very at ease. And when he was done, he asked a couple of us, how did I do? Now that doesn't happen. You don't get that.
Right. You don't.
From 99% of the players. How did I do in that? You know, was I okay? And he was terrific. And I know he was a little bashful in big settings, whether it was post-game or not. But he's an impressive young man. There's no doubt about it. Whether he has a long and successful career in the NFL or not, it doesn't matter to me. I mean, he's going to be a success.
Right. Because obviously, even off the field, you know, he's on track to get his degree in biology.
Oh, yeah.
Pre-med.
Yeah, plans to become a pediatrician. It's very, very impressive. And the thing that strikes me is that, according to his teammates, he's so different between the lines as he is off the field. And that's good. Off the field, he seems very gentle, very reserved. But once he gets between the lines, as we all know, you could see how the intensity dialed up 100-fold.
That was Sean Lee.
Yeah. Sean Lee. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, Sean Lee off, I mean, as soon as on the left side of the blue line, wow. It would give you the shirt off his back. Now, go to the other side of the blue line, different personality.
Yeah, that's a good comparison, Steve, because Sean Lee, yeah, you couldn't help but like him, when you sat down with him and talked to him. But I wouldn't want to play opposite him in football. No way.
There are, over the years that you've covered, Rich, there have been some really good stories. Some are great football stories. Some are great human interest stories. how do you look at the Nassib story as being one of those stories?
It's up there. You know, I'd have to sit down and think of a lot, you know, since 1989 for the Reading Eagle, you know, all the stories that I've written and I'm aware of. But it's got to be in the top five or ten. I mean, at least the top five, I would think, of just, it really came out of nowhere. I mean, this season came out, we're not at practice every day. We're not in the weight room every day. We don't know all these things. But for somebody to walk in, or not, to walk on the team at Penn State as a preferred walk-on and emerge as the best defensive end in the country without having started a game before this year, that's truly remarkable. Truly remarkable. It's been a fun story to cover. Obviously, he's been fun to watch. And, you know, one of my colleagues on the beat said, brought up a good point, Carl Nassib doesn't get hurt early in the fourth quarter at Northwestern. You know, who knows what might have happened in the last few minutes.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, it's a really good story, and I'm happy for him. And I know some people, somebody who used to work at Malvern Prep, and who knows the family, and they tell me that the family couldn't be better people.
Right. Years ago, you wrote a book, Stadium Stories. Colorful Tales of the Blue and White.
You might be the only one who knows that.
Have you thought about now writing another book, considering there's been so much mileage over the last 12 years and so many different things have happened?
I was approached about that and, you know, decided, I guess they wanted a certain format. Lou Prado will tell you this. Maybe it's easier for him, but writing a book is hard work.
Yes, it is.
And I may do it when I'm done, you know, when I'm done covering Penn State or you know, retiring or something like that. I just don't have the time to do that right now. And that was not a long book, but it's very very involved.
Yeah.
And with covering two other beats, small college basketball and high school baseball, it's impossible for me to do that right now. But there's great stories. I mean, my gosh, since 2003, there's a lot to tell.
Right.
I mean, I could just write volumes on just what's happened to Penn State football since then.
Right, exactly. And I was thinking about that because obviously you have a depth of perspective that crosses over decades.
Mm-hmm.
That then puts the last, you know, maybe 12 years or so into perspective. But in the age of computers, have you saved a lot?
Oh, yeah. I've saved too much. I have a lot. Oh, yeah, I have a lot saved. Yeah, I do. You know, and I have stuff going back to the early 90s. I mean interviews and hard copy stuff. Obviously, some people know this, that I covered Kerry Collins in high school and obviously at Penn State. Right. And I have like a whole big file folder full of things just from him that if I ever, you know, he would be a big part of any book that I would write about Penn State.
Right. Oh, yeah, of course. Well, that's one that goes from recruitment right through a professional career.
Yeah. I mean, I covered him as a sophomore right-hander for the Wilson High School baseball team, and he was getting looks by pro baseball scouts then. So, yeah, it'd be interesting, Steve. How about you? Are you thinking about something like that?
Rich, I've had a number of people ask me whether I will or not. Maybe someday.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, that's under the maybe someday.
Yeah,
it's no consideration right now. I think sometimes everybody, I want to really know what he thinks. It's like, okay, yeah, sure you do. But maybe someday, you know.
Yeah,
I'll let you ghostwrite it.
So. Yeah, thanks. but I that's why I admire somebody like Lou.
Oh.
I mean, Lou turns out books like in his sleep, he could turn out one a year.
Oh yeah,
and they're all really interesting too. You know, that's what, you know, I give him a lot of credit. I don't think I could do that. I don't know how, even if I'm retired, I don't think I could do that. But I that's why I admire somebody like him.
Yeah, no, he turns out stuff, and now you're right. And when he turns it out, you read it.
Oh yeah,
I like it. It's really good. Absolutely. The bowl game is interesting in that it's the SEC, so they just move parts around. Kirby Smart's now the head coach at Georgia. Yeah. Pruitt leaves Georgia to take Smart's old job at Alabama. Brian Schottenheimer's out as the offensive coordinator. What does that do to a bowl game to you?
Well, you know, I think another – and I'm not trying to be funny here, but I think another Georgia coach – and announced today that he's not going to be with them for the bowl game. And I'm wondering how many that they're down to. They might be down to about five.
Probably, because they played a bowl game years ago. Mm-hmm. Maybe I think this is when they were transitioning to Richt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess they did the thing with GAs for the most part, and they won.
Yeah. Yeah. I really, you know, I'd have to talk to somebody who's been through that, but I gotta think it's gotta be disconcerting for the kids on the team, you know, unless, you know, they're looking at it like, hey, we're trying to impress the new coach, and that could be too. You know, you could look at it two ways. It could be disconcerting, but you can also be used as motivation and incentive. You have a new coach coming in, and we want to impress him, but it just seems like, you know, just seems like there's a coach leaving every day almost.
Right, and not only that, but Floyd, the outside linebacker, is really, really good. Mm-hmm. He's already announced that this is his last game. He's done. He's out. So he's going to the NFL. From the outside looking in, and I'll give you an example of a guy, John Chavis.
Mm-hmm.
John Chavis is considered to be an outstanding defensive coordinator.
Sure.
And he's been the coordinator against Penn State when he was at Tennessee.
Yep.
He was the coordinator against Penn State when he was at LSU.
LSU, yep.
Now he's at Texas A&M. What is it about, from the outside looking in, of the, quote, culture of the SEC?
Meaning, you mean guys jumping from
The way they jump from job to job within the conference, where you just don't see that happen in the Big Ten.
No. Well, you know, it's probably, you know, follow the money. You know, they're probably, you know, they're probably being outbid. You know, it's probably a bidding war, and you know, you notice, you know, I don't know what Ohio State did to try to keep their, you know, whether it was Tom Herman or Chris Ash,
right. But
you know, they left for head coaching jobs. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know what it is, but you know, I'm sure they're getting a nice bump in salary. And right. Don't we all wish we could get a nice bump in salary? You know, it'd be nice, but why they stay in the SEC? I don't have an answer for that, Steve. I really don't know.
It's like they make what you would say to yourself is a parallel move. So obviously, there's got to be a lot more money involved.
Perhaps it has to be, yeah.
It's the only reason to do it. But they go, I'm going to be the coordinator here. I'm going to be the coordinator here. I mean, they're not leaving to be head coaches. Now,
well, there also could be, you know, we don't know what goes on. We know about the Georgia situation, you know, with Pruitt and Rick, there was a lot that, because that became public, there was a lot of tension,
right?
And maybe even, you know, pretty a split, and maybe that's why these guys leave. Hey, they run into, they're working with somebody. Hey, after two or three years, they realize, hey, this isn't working. I'm out of here. Right. I don't know. You know, maybe every case is different, but why, you know, why they stick around in the SEC? That I don't know. I don't know. I don't have an answer.
Right. Well, tight ends coach and co-special teams coordinator John Lilly is going to be the guy that will call the offense.
Yeah.
And the outside linebacking coach, Kevin Shearer, as expected. I think everybody expected him. He'll be the guy calling the defense. So.
Yeah, yeah. And it'll be interesting. I mean, is it a fresh look at things? Or, you know, I don't know. Again, you know, you brought up something interesting that they won a game 15 years ago, a bowl game, and with a revamped staff, or with a, you know, staff that was pretty much split, before it before the bowl game. So we'll see. But you know, I think this is a good opportunity for Penn State. You know, to beat a quality team, 9-3 team, team from the SEC. You know, it could really change the vibe of the season. Change what everybody thinks about the season. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it can if Penn State can come away with the win.
Rich, it is always a pleasure. Great to hear you, my friend.
Hey, anytime, Steve. Thank you very much.
Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle. Nikki Jabala, Denver Post in the final half hour. We're brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. News next on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Final half hour of the show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Look, 2 weeks from today is Christmas. 2 weeks from today is New Year's Day. I think you need to stock up now. There are a lot of holiday parties going on this weekend. Some maybe you're hosting or some you're going to. And you don't want to go to it empty-handed, and you want to make sure you're fully stocked if you're hosting. And you don't know who's going to stop by during the holidays. You don't know. Suddenly out of nowhere, it's Christmas Eve and somebody stops by. You know, next weekend, somebody stops by. Hey, how you been? Hey, I want you to sit down. We're going to watch the game with all these bowl games that start tomorrow, NFL on Sunday. Just a lot going on. A lot of fun, too. I hope everybody's able to relax during the holidays. Please, relax. Find a moment to relax. Now, I realize that there are a lot of people laughing right now, saying, of all the people who should say relax, him, he's the one telling us to relax. All right, of all the people, and your holiday schedule is what? Yeah, I'm on the road a lot during the holidays. All right, yes, I understand that. But back to Brewers Outlet. All right, you want the best in imports, domestic microbrews. Did I mention beer? Best selection of beer anywhere. Store's really well laid out, too. I really like the layout of the store. Plenty of help to get the cases of the car where there's plenty of free parking. Water, soda, snacks. They roast the peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register. The pickle bar is second to none. I think everyone there knows. They do know. Steve Jones, barrel pickle guy. Steve Jones, dill pickle guy. No doubt. That's me. Love it. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. And we are in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Wouldn't that make the ultimate Christmas gift right there? Wow. Sunbury Motors. Kevin just turned in another great Sunbury Motors car that you should take a long, hard look at because the deal on it is outstanding. Okay, time now for our sports bozo of the day. Vontaze Burfict of the Cincinnati Bengals. And look, I was pushed into Roethlisberger. There's no way you were pushed into Roethlisberger. And Roethlisberger thought it was a deliberate low hit. I agree with Ben Roethlisberger. The NFL is now going to fine Vontaze Burfict, of which he is appealing. It is not as if this is not the first time he has heard from the NFL. Do you realize that Vontaze Burfict has already racked up $77,000 this year in fines? Wow. Vontaze Burfict, our sports bozo of the day. All right, let's get to Steelers and Broncos. It's a very intriguing matchup. Peyton Manning did practice this week, but Brock Osweiler is the starting quarterback. Steelers are red hot. Believe it or not, with the Cowboys playing the Jets tomorrow night, the Steelers then play the Denver Broncos. And it turns out that the Steelers... Usually you would think if you win, you're in. Just keep winning. That's not the case. The Steelers would then grab an advantage over the Jets on common opponents and actually go past the Jets even if they both win. Amazing. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Nikki Jabala covers the Denver Broncos for the Denver Post. Nikki, first of all, welcome. It is great to have you with us. In fact, earlier this week, we watched your podcast on the Broncos, and you did a terrific job. What happened in that Raiders game in which the Raiders won it 15-12?
The second half happened. Khalil Mack happened five times, actually. It was just a tale of two halves. I mean, they couldn't get anything going in the run game, and Brock Osweiler's inexperience clearly showed. It's kind of drifting behind the line of scrimmage, and the offensive line, porous as it has been all season, was even more so in that game. So it was just a really bad half, and they just couldn't get much going.
For Brock Osweiler, look, my only exposure to watching him, besides seeing him play several games at Arizona State, is obviously the preseason, which is never the greatest gauge on anything. Does he just fit what Gary Kubiak wants to do? Does his style fit Gary Kubiak really well?
I think so. The kid's got a strong arm. He's very mobile. And he leads a balanced attack, which is what Gary Kubiak wanted to do the day he stepped foot in this building. They struggled to find a compromise with Peyton Manning in the early going, though I think they were on track to doing it a little bit more. But then Peyton got hurt. I think he really does fit the offense, but he is inexperienced. So they're working through a lot of the kinks now. And the problem is, they're really late in the season. They just don't have the time to really work with him like they probably would have earlier in the season,
Nikki, I know Peyton Manning did get back to practice this week, but Brock Osweiler is going to be the starting quarterback against the Steelers.
Right.
What do you see evolving there? If Osweiler keeps winning, does he keep playing, or is this still Peyton Manning's job?
Well, that's kind of been the question the last couple of weeks, and it'll be interesting on Monday depending on the outcome of this game. I think right now it's Osweiler's team. He's healthy, he's been leading them, and Peyton's gonna have to prove that he's really healthy to get back in there. I will say that he did look good today, probably better than I thought he would at this point, considering, I haven't seen him out there until this morning, but Peyton did look, like he was moving on his feet well, he was throwing well. That's been the biggest question this whole time. What happens when Peyton is healthy? Does he get that chance to go again? So we'll see.
Is it the bottom line? I mean, obviously Manning's had neck issues and so forth, but has part of this been because of that foot, he hasn't been able to fire off that foot at all? Has that been the biggest problem?
That's exactly what it is. Peyton's never one to tell you how injured he really is. We saw that last season with the quad injury, but a partially torn plantar fascia, it's one thing when it's fully torn, there's less pain, but when it's partially torn like this, it's hard to do much of anything. If you can't get your footing out there, you're not going to be able to throw well. It's going to be all over the place, and it was in that Kansas City game. So that's kind of been everything right now.
After the loss to Oakland, how is there a concern in Denver that despite having what has been a really good year so far, that there's a scenario they can miss the playoffs? How concerned are they here down the stretch, especially because of the second half of the Oakland game?
They say they're not too concerned about the playoffs. They say they're focused on game to game, though I realize that's a, kind of an NFL cliche at this point. Right. I think they're more concerned with the offense in general. They just haven't had that consistency. You know, they have had great games, like against Green Bay. I thought Chicago, they played well, very balanced. But they don't have games in halves like they did against Oakland, where you're just, you know, throwing your hands up, like, what is going on? Why can you get things going sometimes, but not others? So I think that's been the most concerning thing for them, is just finding that balance and keeping it going.
Defensively, the Broncos have been, I think it's safe to say, outstanding almost all year.
Yeah, historically great.
Yeah, what has allowed that? That sometimes when you see teams that are historically great, usually it starts at the corner spots, and then you can turn the other nine guys loose. Is that the case, or are they just good across the board?
I think it's their depth. You know, it starts on the edge with Vaughn and DeMarcus because this defense is really built around those edge rushers.
Right.
But they're so deep. I mean, they have four good edge rushers when teams would, you know, be thrilled to have two. They got Shaq Barrett and Shane Ray spelling them. Lorente has come in and done good things, too. They're inside linebackers. They play so well together, and they're deep at that position, too. And they're secondary. I mean, you know, they call themselves a no-fly zone, and you know, they actually live up to it.
Yeah, they live up. I was going to ask you, what Aqib Talib, Chris Harris, and then the number three guy is a guy I saw a lot of, obviously, because he played at Ohio State, and that's Bradley Roby.
Right.
How well have they done back there shutting people down? Do those guys at the corner need help from safeties, or can they handle usually wideouts themselves?
No, I think they need help, and I think that's why this unit works so well together. I mean, this is basically the same group they had last season, save for Darren Stewart, and you see how much more effective they are in this defense. So I think they need every person they have in this defense. Those corners are remarkable, though. I mean, Chris Harris hasn't allowed a touchdown in coverage since November 24th, 2013, I believe. So, yeah, they're great together. They play well together. And I think the addition of Darren Stewart, he replaced Raheem Moore, who left for the Texans.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been fantastic. So, fun to watch.
When you look at what they've done to a top receiver, they've done a great job on top receivers. Mm-hmm. Amari Cooper, I don't think, had a catch. Calvin Johnson was under 10 yards a catch. Randall Cobb had 27 yards. Jeremy Maclin, that played the Chiefs twice, he totaled 74 yards, totaled. Now they've got Antonio Brown. How do you view that matchup? Because it's not just Brown, it's also Bryan and Wheaton in the mix now for Roethlisberger.
Right. I think this could be their biggest challenge. You know, I thought Detroit at the time was their biggest challenge. That was in like week three, I believe, with Golden Tate and Megatron. But I think this is their biggest challenge of the season. I mean, the Steelers receiving core is no joke. But the defense for the Broncos has been consistent. I mean, they have been the driving force for this team. You know, it's interesting to see the turnaround in kind of their image and what this team is known for, but it's definitely the defense right now. So it'll be interesting.
All right, now back to the offense. Can they generate enough of a ground game? They obviously did against the Patriots. Can they generate enough of a ground game? Because the Steeler defense is, the front seven's been good. The back four have been fill in the blank.
They have to. They have to go anywhere. They have to establish the run game. You've seen the success they've had when they do get the run game going. I think a lot of it will depend on CJ Anderson and whether he's healthy enough to go. He was active last game, but he did not play at all because of an ankle injury. He didn't do much in practice today. They'll probably list him as limited, if anything. But a lot of that will be dependent on him and the line. I mean, the offensive line had probably the worst outing to date last game. So we'll see. I mean,
Right.
It kind of all starts and ends with that in this offense, you know, because Osweiler is very much a game manager. You know, they keep it conservative with him, and they got to get a run game going to have any success. They got to find the end zone at some point.
Right. Yeah, and also kill the clock a bit to keep Roethlisberger off the field. Would that be a fair assessment?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Was the Oakland thing, were people out there waiting for an Oakland game to happen? Or was everybody out there so euphoric with the way Osweiler was playing and they were 3-0 that they didn't see it coming?
No, I think if there's any anticipation, it's more of what can Osweiler do and what will that mean in the long term? I don't think necessarily that people are waiting for, you know, the cards to come falling down because he did look good in those first three wins. But his weaknesses were apparent. You know, he had 5 sacks in his first outing too. That number just kind of got, you know, swept under the rug because they won and they won well. So I think it's still that elephant in the room, you know. If Osweiler does well, then what? If Osweiler doesn't do well, then what? You know, and I think that's still been the biggest anticipation here.
From the outside looking in and just from reading, it sounds like Osweiler has one of those personalities that a lot of people gravitate toward. Is that fair? If that's from the outside looking in, you would know better than I would.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think he has the trust of his teammates. He's been here 4 years. That's a thing that kind of gets overlooked sometimes because he is so new to starting. But he has been here 4 years. So he has a rapport with a lot of the guys here. And he's, you know, he's very personable. I'll give him that. You know, he's very personable. He's confident. So, yeah, I would say the guys gravitate toward him. I would say media gravitate toward him. You know, he's easy to deal with. Yeah. For sure.
Demaryius Thomas and Sanders have been the top two guys on the outside. What about the tight ends? Owen Daniels, and has Vernon Davis added enough that made it worth getting?
Yeah, I think so. I think his presence on the field has allowed them to do more with their tight ends, which has in turn opened up more things for Owen and for Vernon. It's helped to get their ground game going. So while you may not see everything in the stat sheet, I think his presence alone has, you know, added that factor that Kubiak was looking for, and, you know, a 3 tight end sets, 2 tight end sets that they were missing before. The loss of Julius Thomas obviously left a big void. You know, and they had Virgil and they had Owen, they had a few others earlier in the season, but I think Vernon does add a lot.
Nikki, when you sit down to look at this game and have a preliminary checklist of things in the matchup between the two, what would be on your preliminary checklist in a Broncos-Steelers matchup?
You mean in terms of matchups to watch or things the Broncos need to do or what?
Things to watch and also a couple of matchups that you think are swing matchups in this game.
Well, I think, you know, Big Ben against the Broncos edge rushers will definitely be a matchup to watch, mainly for interest because I think that could be very entertaining to see him go against Vaughn and DeMarcus, see how they handle themselves. I think another one is, you know, just Emmanuel's return. This is his first time back in Pittsburgh. And I know him and Roethlisberger had, you know, probably didn't go out on the best of terms after recent comments. And the other one is just to see how Osweiler manages his offense, how they respond to that loss. You know, can they get this ground game going? That'll be huge. And that'll go a long way toward determining their playoff future and their long-term future, I believe.
Nikki, it was an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much. We appreciate the insight. I think a lot of Steeler fans around here, I think, know a lot more about the Denver Broncos after hearing you.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Nikki Javala from the Denver Post. A lot of first-time guests on the show today. Kent Summers from the Arizona Republic and azcentral.com. Nikki Javala from the Denver Post. Now, repeat guests, of course, Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report, and, of course, Rich Scarcella. But I thought a nice mix today. Really enjoyed it a lot. And we had a lot of fun. Coming up, obviously we got high school basketball coming up this weekend. And the Penn State basketball team will play in the Palestra. They will take on Drexel tomorrow night at 7. Plestra's is a great venue. Great venue. We had Dick Girardi on the show yesterday. Coming up next week, we'll do the shows from Las Vegas, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday next week. Shows from Las Vegas. Looking forward to seeing what's going to be really a great tournament. Colorado is 8-1. They still have games tonight and tomorrow to play before they get to Vegas. SMU is 9-0, and Larry Brown makes his sideline return in that one for SMU on Tuesday night. And Kent State 7-2. So this is a really good tournament coming up. The airtime is 10 o'clock on Tuesday night with a 10:30 tip-off. Because remember, Las Vegas is in Pacific time, so they're 3 hours behind. So when I'm doing the show with you on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, Kevin's going to be sitting there 3 to 5. I'm going to be sitting someplace where it's noon to 2. I'll be done at 2 o'clock in the afternoon Pacific time each day. Like, look around. It's 2 o'clock. Now what do I do? But now, as for the travel, all right, people have asked about, you know, I told everybody, relax. Just relax during the holidays. Relax. Hey, this is what I'm doing. Tonight, I go to Philadelphia. As soon as the show's over, I go to Philadelphia tonight. Then a game tomorrow night at the Palestra in Philadelphia. At 7, we're on at 6:30. Leave for the airport at 5 a.m. on Sunday. Flight leaves at 8 o'clock Sunday morning, Philadelphia direct flight to Las Vegas, and lands there, I think it lands there, I don't know, at 1:30 in the afternoon or something like that, so whatever. So then do the shows Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday there with games on Tuesday and Wednesday there. Then I have a 12:45 a.m. flight Christmas Eve. It gets me back into Philadelphia around 8:30 or something like that. Then they bus back to State College and get back here about 2 on Christmas Eve. Then I'm here to do shows Monday, Tuesday, the 28th and 29th. And then after the show on the 29th, I go to College Park to do a game on the 30th at Maryland, which we'll hear here. Then come back after that game, get 6 hours of sleep again on a plane, and go to Jacksonville on the 31st, do the game on the 2nd, and come back after the game. Like I said, it's the holidays. Relax. Have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket, and from the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.